So good evening, everyone. How's the volume on this mic? Is it okay? Okay, good. So I'm happy to be with you. I've been reflecting on the tradition that this group is kind of founded out of. And I'm guessing that, as a matter of fact, I know if you take a group this size, I think there's about 30 people here, we're not all practicing in the same way. Not doing this when you meditate, you're not all doing the same practices. There are many other practices that I include in what I call Dharma practice. So what we're doing, it's individual. Probably in a group like this, it's within a kind of more or less familiar or have a lot of similarities of teachings and understandings and practices. But even within that, we're, what we do is different because we're all different, right? And our spirituality, each person's spiritual path, is unique. And in fact, I would say there is no form or structure or system or body of teachings that's right for everyone. It's highly individual. And now some people might argue with that and say, well, that's nice to have that kind of inclusive attitude, but actually, no. There is this way or kind of system that's kind of the right way, and if you're not practicing in these ways, you don't have this understanding, it may not be heading towards whatever your aims are. It may not be heading, say, to what the Buddha was talking about. And that gets a little problematic because we really don't know as much as we often think about what the Buddha was actually teaching. And sometimes people feel that they want to get back to what the Buddha really taught. I don't know if you've ever felt that way, but I think that'd be pretty good if we could do that, you know. And there's been a lot of scholarship around that, but it turns out to be problematic. In, I think it was about 20 years ago, I may be off on my timeline, there were some, do you know about the Gandharan texts that were found? Some of you are nodding your head. Some of you won't know. So the Gandhari region is in, I think, modern Pakistan and Afghanistan. And these texts, I believe they were written on birch bark, if I remember correctly, something like that. And the people back, way back, close to the time of the Buddha, wrote these texts down and stored them in earthenware urns or jars, and they were discovered. Again, I may be a little off on the timeline, but they're pretty recent discoveries. And there's a big effort going on these days to translate them. And there's been some progress made, but it's probably going to take a long time. And I think there was a lot of excitement when they were discovered because people thought, oh, great, we've got this other thread. And I don't know if it's a complete canon. I think it may be a complete canon or fairly complete. There's a lot there. And the idea is that if you look at what we had before that, we had the Pali texts out of the Theravada tradition, which is kind of in our scene. And we think those are getting... Well, we know that they go back probably the best we had to go back close to the Buddha. But there's a lot of things in there that are clearly added later, and they developed over a number of centuries before they were finally written down, maybe 400 or 500 years after the Buddha died. So we know a lot of changes, and so it's hard to really get back how much was changed and added. And then there are some Chinese texts called agamas, and that's a thread that's kind of, I think that came more out of the Sanskrit tradition. I'm going to miss. I've read about this in the past, but I'm a little rusty on the whole history. Either very complete or fairly complete canon there that could be compared. So it's like, wow, we can have this Gandharan text now. And wouldn't it be nice if we could go back to these Chinese agamas and the Pali texts? There are other texts of other traditions too, but they're not as complete. We have different pieces. And take all these, now we've got this Gandharan text. If we can take them back and see where's the commonality, that's getting us back to something early. We may not be able to get right back to the Buddha, but maybe we could get within a century or start to get back more. Well, it turns out that rather than clarify things, it confused things worse. Because it turned out that it's not like you can take them all back and find this one commonality and then they all evolve from there. They were all cross-pollinating each other. So in each of the different traditions that we have text from, they're all mixes of things that came in different combinations from different schools. So, you know, this school might think a new innovation or new understanding comes from another school. It's like, oh, that's good. We should incorporate that too. But maybe someone from our school pollinates over to them and back and forth. So it was more like this weaving that was happening around and not one clear path. So it made it not so easy to get back to the source. So I found that to be quite liberating, not confusing. Because what it says is there's not one right Buddhism. And there's not one right understanding, one right way. And we can see that even today. You just take our tradition and you just go to a place like Spirit Rock. Many of you have been there. I was teaching on the February month-long retreat there. And I used to teach there quite a lot. I don't teach that much anymore. And I hadn't taught with this particular group for a long time, for some number of years. So when I came there, they invited me in. And I said to them, I said, you know, I haven't taught with you for a while. So I want to make sure, you know, I'm doing what you want. You know, I'm a guest teacher here. You know what? And I can, if you let me know the style you want to teach in, I can do that. Do you want that? Or would you like me to just bring my own style? And they said, no, and I really just want to get clear what would serve. And they said, no, we'd like for you just to bring your own, what, yourself in, and you don't have to blend here. So obviously everybody wants to sort of come together in a way that's seamless and works and everything. And I think that it happened, we weren't that far apart, but actually, right on that retreat, they're getting, because they were all kind of in, they weren't even all teaching the same, the other teachers. But then I was a little, I wasn't in conflict, but just getting different angles on things. They'd asked me to do it, so I did. So even in a place like that, it's not just one way, is my point. You'll go there and you'll hear different ways, right? So there's different teachings out there. It's a big world. And by the way, that's just in the Buddhist world. Or I could say the Dharma world, which is, I don't use Buddhism and Dharma interchangeably. They're different in my mind. That's what, we can talk about that if you want. My intention here, by the way, is to, hopefully I will have some discipline and stop at a certain point so we can open it up for other people may want to share or questions or whatever. So if we do that, maybe we'll see what people want to talk about. We could talk about that. So it's this, it's in a way, Dharma and spirituality is simple, but it can be complex. Like, there's all these teachings, and then we're each different. And so I think what it comes down to is, there are two pieces here that I don't feel that are in conflict, but I want to name them, just sort of separate them out just to make my point, but there's a place where they come together. I feel like it's so important to listen to our own truth. What's going to serve us each best, right? Like I said earlier, we're not all the same. Yeah. On that February retreat, I caught hell for one thing I did. There was one guy on the retreat. He'd come into the retreat. It all worked out fine. I'm exaggerating a little, but... there was one piece of business he thought he had taken care of well enough to let go and come, and then it turned out it didn't get taken care of. It was a major life-altering decision that had to be made. So one school of thought was, you're here on the retreat. If you're going to stay here, just got to let it go. Work with it. Deal with it. Just be here with it. And, you know, you could have chosen to do that. And he did that for about a week. But he's basically sitting there just stirred up, churning. So it's like, okay, you've done that. Like, what's the point of sitting with that for another 3 weeks? You can do it if you want. So my thing was, you need to leave the retreat. Go out. Don't take a day or two. Handle your business and then come back. He ended up doing that. But that's like heresy. You know. But in my mind, it's like there's not one set formula that fits all. It's like, what's actually needed here? And it was clear he needed to go take care of his business. He thought he had handled it and just didn't. So he did leave. Came back 2 days later. It all got handled so his life didn't fall apart. And he came back. He was able to let go and he was in this great place and move on. So he actually spent a little time. He knew how to sit in the fire. So he did that. But then he did what was needed. Actually, I'm remembering another time on a retreat that I'm going to get myself in trouble. Somebody came there and they had so much energy in the body and in their mind. And generally, when you go on these retreats, there's kind of the idea is to try to, you know, you can do movement in your body, but you want to kind of slow down. And I said to this one person, listen, my recommendation is you need to be, they brought a bicycle because they were traveling or whatever. Like I said, you should ride your bike twice a day. Just go out for like a 1 hour ride. If that doesn't work, just go run up this hill, mountain. You should be out like 2-3 hours a day, power walking. Now for other people, that's the opposite of what would be needed. You wouldn't say that to them. It'd be kind of stirring them up too much. But for this person, they kind of got out what needed to get out. And then she was able, when she came back, really settle. Because that was what was needed, right? And so this is an interesting place of how much do we listen to our truth? The potential pitfall is that we could end up following our delusion or just chasing after our likes and dislikes, right? So there can be a power to pouring yourself into a form, whether it's a teaching, a style of practice, whatever, a system, a religion, whatever you want to call it, and just fully giving yourself over to that. And it's not about your opinion anymore. You're just, and it's forcing you then into probably a pretty profound letting go that has to happen. It could be, right? So that can be very powerful. And but the potential pitfall there is that you're trying to put a round peg in a square hole. And you can keep doing that and doing that and doing that, and at some point it's not serving, it's actually counterproductive. And then people sometimes wonder, what's wrong with me? I'm not progress is this tricky word, but I'm not afraid of the word progress at all, as long as we have the right understanding of what we mean. So we have to be careful there. Flip side again is we go the other way. We say, no, I'm going to listen to myself. But then we're just going with our preferences. You know. So what are we to do? Well, I would offer that no matter what, we're always actually in the end choosing. Even if you decide to just give yourself over to the form and let go of, you know, this idea of listening to your own truth because you're just going to give over to a particular system or form, that's your choice. You've decided to do that. So you're still following your own best discernment or your best understanding. Right? And for all of us, we're going to have times when we were following our delusion more, thinking we're following our wisdom. I think that's just true. It's going to happen many times. Okay. There'll be other times when we go too far the other way, where it's like, you know, we think we're sticking with something, and really, I knew somebody, I remember once someone came to me and they had been on a retreat, I don't know, we were out at Spirit Rock somewhere else, and they were sitting cross-legged, you know, down on the floor on a cushion, and they were having knee trouble. They went to the teacher, this is what they came and told me, and they said the teacher just said to this person, "You don't need to move." And the way they conveyed it to me, didn't check it out with them, see what's going on, just had this idea that you just sit and work with things. And actually they ended up getting some kind of, I think, a little cartilage damage in their knee. Well, what good is that? What's the point? Damaging your knee? No, they should have stretched their leg out or gotten up into a chair or something, right? That was bad advice. Just because someone's the Dharma teacher doesn't mean... I'm sitting up here, maybe, you know, you've got to use your own discernment, right? When we sit up here and who's ever in this role, right? So, you know, we don't want to fall into this one-size-fits-all. So my approach, I'll just offer it to you. I hope all of you, you know, you're all finding your own way, but my approach is all we can do is follow our best sense of anything. And for some of us, maybe we shouldn't be in the Dharma world or the Buddhist world. Maybe it's your Catholicism or Native American tradition or Wicca or, you know, just whatever it is, Islam or your own personalized, intimate spiritual connection with the mystery. And you can't, right? Because ultimately, it's not about any, this is what I said earlier, it's just not about any system or form at all, or any body of teachings. Those are meant to help us. Now, I want to be really careful here and respectful. Probably all of us, I know for myself, we do need some structure, form, right? You know, some practices to train our hearts and minds. Most of us, you know, we're probably, you know, horribly ignorant. Right? Most of us don't really even know ourselves. I don't know now, this is, looks like a bunch of experienced practitioners, but just the human condition in general, right? And we're just led around by our avoiding pain and seeking pleasure. You know, all the standard Dharma teachings. So we find ourselves in this human condition. And so, yes, we probably all need some structure or system, framework to work with. And so we don't want to throw that out. Yet, ultimately, it comes to something very alive and immediate, and it's just alive for each of us, which is not, it's not even a verbal or conceptual, right? It's simply what's the pure beingness of your own being in any moment is really what comes down to. And that's not a... so if you're... For myself, my own practice, I still have a regular daily meditation practice. I meditate still a fair amount. I've been doing it for... Next year will be 50 years. And I still meditate as much, a lot. And it's still continuing to grow. So that I don't know what would happen if I stopped. I haven't done the experiment. So I don't know. So I still do that. And then for myself, my practice has gotten very simple. During the rest of my day, as I'm moving about, either my heart's closed off or it's open. And if it's open, I don't need to do anything. I can know that. I don't have to get sucked into it. I can have an awake presence. But I just live with an open heart. If I'm caught in clinging, if I'm resting in the stream of non-clinging, I don't have to do anything. I just live. When the heart's open, non-clinging, you just live. If the heart's closed, open the heart. If I'm caught and clean, let go. And it's a real simple thing of learning. And so, for me, I'll just offer that. I don't know if that's your individual way it looks, but it's gotten very, very simple. And then sometimes I still, the old lists will come back as a form or a structure to support. But in the moment, if my heart's open and you're just in the heart of love or empathy, right, it's universal. And you can come to that in any way. through any tradition or non-tradition. And if you're opening up through what we call liberation through non-clinging, assuming that's even your goal in your own spiritual life, right? You can come to that through anything. Or whatever your own goals. I bet you we don't even all have the same goals. I mean, maybe if we went around, I don't know if people want to share about it, but, you know, people might say, oh, yeah, I want nirvana, or a lot of people don't know. We're not clear. I know when I came to my spiritual practice, I was young, and I think I was 18 when I started, and I hadn't formulated in my mind what is it I'm looking for, what's I'm seeking. I didn't know. But I knew that I didn't want this, but there's something that I want. And there's something mysterious, all these meditators, and I had a sense that there's something there, and I wanted to know what was happening when they were all sitting there like this, and, you know, going off merging with Buddha or whatever I thought they were doing. You know, I used to sit, I remember when I was young, I would sit there and I'd look around and like, oh, my knees about, like, feels like a knife stabbing in it, and all my self-esteem and unworthiness is roaring up, and I'm just, it's just all suffering, body, mind, and heart, and I'd look around and like, everybody's just like still, it's like, God, everybody's blissed out but me, look at that, what's wrong with me? Of course, then you find out we're all the same, we're all different, but we're all the same, we have our sufferings and we have our freedoms and all of that. So I don't know what each of you are looking for in your own practice, your life. And you may have a vague sense, or maybe you've really reflected on it. That's an interesting place. If you haven't done it, you know, we put a lot of emphasis on intention. And I think you don't have to get it really crystal clear and articulate it really clearly in your mind. But if... maybe it's just a sense of something, but really spend time connecting with intention, because that's what's going to carry us through. Because if we don't know the right way, we're not sure, am I following my delusion? Is this the right way? Or I'm getting different teachings? Or you know, maybe I don't feel like I'm a Buddhist anymore. What's going on? I used to be a Buddhist. Or I don't know. It can just manifest in so many ways as we grow. Or I didn't used to be a Buddhist. Now I am one. Whatever. If we stay in touch with our intention of where we want to aim, that good, sincere intention, I think, will always guide us. Because if you're really close to it and connected and it's alive for you, then make whatever choice you make your best choice. And even if you screw it up, you'll learn. Right? It's a feedback loop. Right? Like the person who hurt their knee. Now, I don't know if they ended up with permanent damage. I don't know. Hopefully that. But, you know, that person learned. Oh, listen to myself. I don't need someone else telling me when it's time to move my knee. It's my damn knee, and I know when to stretch my leg out. On the flip side of it, I used to teach at... there's a Zen monastery in upstate New York, near Albany, it's the town of Woodstock, called Zen Mountain Monastery. It was, what's that guy's name? Was it John Dido Laurie, I think was his name? It's his monastery. And it was sort of combined Soto and Rinzai Japanese Zen. It was super, because I have a book out that the abbot liked. So he invited me a couple of years to go there and teach. And what was interesting, because I'm not much in the Zen world, going there, it was the most strict form and system I had ever been around. It's like there was a prescribed way to do everything. How to breathe, practically. I mean, it was just like, you didn't, they just had this system and you had to just pour yourself into it to be there. It would seem very, on the outside, it could almost seem rigid and, I don't know, it was just really intense. But the people there, it struck me, I actually talked to the abbot about this, the people there were the opposite. Some of the most, just they were smiling, loving, spacious, relaxed group. And I was joking around. I don't want to offend anyone with what I'm going to say. I was kind of trying to be light, but I said to the abbot, I said, you know, this is very interesting. I said, in the Vipassana world, We don't have any outer form. We care a lot about how we use the mind, and we want to have some real intentionality and purpose there. But we don't have it. We're just whatever. We could be lying on the floor. We could whatever. But half of us are just completely neurotic. And then here, you guys are the most rigid, austere system. But everybody's like just beaming and in love and happy. And what he said to me was, which I thought was very interesting, he said, well, there are plenty of people who, if they were here in his system, it would be terrible. And they need to be in a more open kind of system. But for other people, and actually I ended up talking to a couple of people there who told me, they said, they need that system, because that's the opposite. That's what works for them. And in fact, one guy said, you know, having this system, it was very interesting. He said, and like I said, just giving himself over to it, he found a tremendous freedom because he just let go into the system. And he didn't feel oppressed by it as some would. He felt just, he didn't have to think. You just show up, you do the thing. But in his mind, he was free. So that was a beautiful example how the opposite in some ways can be for one person and another. And some of you may know the kind of well-known quote from Ajahn Chah. Many of you know who he was. You may not all know. He was a great Thai. We use the word master. He's a monk and great teacher. And there's a quote, famous quote, where he talks about being criticized because people criticize him because sometimes he would give instructions to one person and he would give different or maybe even opposite instructions to someone else, and he got criticized. And he said it's like he saw people walking down a road that he knew very well, and there's a ditch on both sides. And he said if someone was veering off towards the right, he'd call out, "Go left, go left." But if they started veering to the left, he would call, "Go right, go right." So he gives different instructions, but the way he said it was the idea to have him going like on the straight path. So that's kind of the trick for all of us, right, is to learn to listen to ourselves. But ultimately, whether we pour ourselves into a particular form or system, or we're really just following our own way and whatever our own style is, ultimately, I think for all of us, we have to come to a place where we're ultimately our own inner knowing, not an ego, but a deeper place. You call it your inner teacher, comes alive. And I may have talked about this idea. I have a vague memory. I think I've been here maybe a year ago. It's been a long time. So perhaps you've heard me say that. But I talk about that a lot, coming to know our own inner teacher. And really with experience, right? That's how you learn anything. Coming to know, we may not always have it perfect, but really coming to know when it's just my greed, hatred, and delusion pulling at me. And when is the time that, no, this is a place I can trust. And we've learned, maybe through trial and error, maybe we've messed up or fallen flat on our face, you know, 100 times and then picked ourselves up. But through all of that, we've come to learn. And ultimately, I think that's where it's not something outside of ourselves. And that's a different place then, not from the beginning, but towards, not the, I want to be careful, not the end. I mean, I don't claim to be near the end of the path, but, you know, I'm not immune from suffering, but I've been very pleased with the results. And I hope, to really stay attuned to that inner knowing and come to rely on it more and more. And then, as we know ourselves more and more, if things change, if we want to feel, some people then will still feel more connected and more affinity with a structure and a form and a system, much as more as ever, and it even is more alive. And other people, it may shift and drop away, but we know it's coming from a place we can trust. So I think that's just an important thing that I hope all of us can learn to trust ourselves in that way. That in itself can be a challenge for some people, right? Depending on our own inner challenges, or you could say inner wounding. That may not be the best word. Our own psychology. You know, we all have our places where we're free, and we all have our places where we have our struggles just as human beings. And for some people, this idea of validating ourselves or trusting ourselves can be, we can all fall into it. Sometimes it can be a big challenge. And so that's fine. That's just, you know, what it looks like for some people. And that's part of the learning over time. And if we try to open and trust ourselves and we realize that it's hard or brings up a lot of doubt, right there, it's not to judge ourselves. But right there, it's showing just something, oh, wait a minute, this is a place in me that's hard for me. I don't know how to trust myself. I don't trust myself. I don't validate myself. And then we would want to, well, that could be a whole thing, right? Every one of us have our areas of challenge. I mentioned earlier when I would do my early retreats and all my self-esteem would come up. Well, there were areas that's a big, that could mean a lot of things, but, you know, I had my own inner despair, self-judgment, and I just call it a self-esteem pathology, very strongly there. So that was my version. So we can all have our different versions, and really even some of the deepest psychology, I think, can start to disentangle. I don't know if you ever get, as if you never had the wound, but we can do a lot. We can do a lot. So, and the final thing, and then I'll stop, and maybe we can see if there's other discussion or Q&A or whatever. I was talking to just before the sit. So most of you probably don't know this, but I was actually had on my calendar two times to come here and be with this group since the last time I was here. I actually showed up for this one. But the time before this, now I had, it's not an excuse, but I had a lot of stuff going on with my daughter this weekend. She was in a crisis about, I just forgot to come. And then I looked later at my calendar and was like, oh, shit. That has never happened to me in my life, ever. Not, I mean, sometimes things come up, but just to forget. And I felt all this. And so, you know, it didn't feel that great. And people were, I assume they were being sincere, but people were very gracious about it. And I was very appreciative about that. You know, I got caught up with my daughter. She was on this high-risk pregnancy, and she was bleeding, and she's going to lose the baby running around. And, you know, it's not an excuse, but it's just what happened. And so people were cool about it. Now, I could have held that in a lot of different ways. I did feel kind of bad about it. It's not like I didn't feel anything. I did kind of go, oh, jeez. It was a little bit of, ugh. But also I held it, so I'm not saying I'm immune from that, but also I held it at, well, this is what happens when you just, something drops out of your mind. You don't even know it's gone. Like, let me ask you a question. Right now, what is the thing that's completely dropped out of your mind that you don't even know is gone? Right. What are you going to do? So I knew it was one of those, even though I felt some embarrassment. So my point is, if we hold it with the right thing, and then you learn. Actually, it was a great learning, because I don't think that's ever going to happen to me again. I'm so good at checking my calendar every day, and even when I got locked on. So it was actually a learning to help. If we listen to ourselves, too, it's like that. We got to be willing to just show up in an authentic way with ourselves and with others, staying in touch with our intention. And if everyone in here has a good intention. Our greed, hatred, and delusion will come in a lot of times, and we're not always acting in a moment with a good intention, right? Sometimes in the moment, if we knew what was, if we had a little helmet we could put on and put a projector and could see what was going on in your mind, it wouldn't look that great. Me too, you could put one on my head. But our good intention didn't go anywhere. We just lost it in the moment. So if we can stay in touch with our good intention that we all have, and let that be our guidance, and then be will, just have the experimental attitude, be willing to learn, and willing to say, you know, I'm going to listen. Let me do the experiment. Let me just listen to myself. And if it turns out we could, it's like, oh, you know, I can trust. And if it turns out you didn't, that's still a learning. It's helping you learn to trust yourself, because it's saying, yes, trust yourself, but not that, or whatever. So it's all holding ourselves with kindness. And it's really like a self-empathy. I don't know if that's a real word, but self-empathy. In a way it is, because we can get disconnected from ourselves, right? Away from ourselves in a way. And then we have to reconnect and almost have an empathy for ourselves. I like empathy, that term is my personal favorite more than, compassion's good, love is good. I like empathy a lot, personally. So anyway, I think I'll stop there, and I appreciate your kind attention. And so we have about 15 minutes before we'll do the metta cards. And so this is the time, if anybody wants to add anything or questions, whatever. Yes, please. Oh, do you use the mic?
When you were talking about trusting yourself, I just came back from a week-long retreat, and one of the teachers, I think it was Ruth King, was talking about this, and I've been thinking a lot about it. And she was talking about how in your practice, how you trust yourself. And I guess one of her teachers had told her to look at the difference between creating tension and strength and seeing, again, what your effort is and how you're holding the practice, yourself, your heart, and noticing the difference between those two. And it's really... what I realized, sometimes it's very subtle, but there's a little bit more for me of grasping when there's the tension, more of an unpleasant tightness, and a strength. It's somewhat similar. There's almost a solidity to it, but without that little extra ouch. So this is something I've been working with, and I was maybe think of that with your talk about how you can feel through whether something is skillful or not. Mm.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I really appreciated what you said, because I've been pretty new to Buddhist practice, and I've had a long meditation practice of about 20 years, but I've dabbled in this and that, and pretty much everything you named I've dabbled in. And I found myself at a Zen monastery in Seattle about 4 years ago, walking my dog, and I found it. And I would go there every morning, and it was very, very structured. And what I'm thinking as I'm listening to you is this kind of like, it's like if you're in Kaiser or you have your own medical insurance, it's like the less choice, the more peaceful for me. And so there was something about it that there was no choice there. It was just showing up,
yes,
having the tea, doing everything exactly the same.
Kind of what I was talking about, how for some people it just allowed them more freedom.
So I've come back here where I lived before I moved to Seattle, and I've been trying to find my place. And haven't really found, you know, I've gone out to Green Gulch, and I've gone to Spirit Rock, and I live a minute from here, so I've been coming here every week. And the other thing you said is that, what I started thinking about is that it doesn't really matter, like, what, I sometimes think that I wish I had started this, you know, 30 years ago so I knew more. But
you said you've been practicing for 20 years.
Buddhism. I've been practicing spiritual practice. But I wish that I, you know, found it years ago so I knew more. But then I always come back to, it doesn't matter. Like, it's just where you're at in that day, in that moment, with that breath, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And
right.
Share that.
But you know, that's so important, and I'm glad you shared that, and I think you're being sincere, and I hope you are, because, like I say, since it's not one way, it's like, yeah, you might know more Buddhism. So since you're newer into Buddhism, I don't know if you're aware that the Buddha was not a Buddhist, for real. Was not a Buddhist. And most of the stuff that we teach, you go to a place like Spirit Rock, it's actually coming out of this commentarial work that was about 800 years after the Buddha called the Visuddhimagga. And it's, I mean, this isn't disparaging anything. It's just that particular form of the system. It's getting away from the suttas stuff there. So whatever you would learn about anyway would just be one, or it's just more stuff, right? It's not just the aliveness of being alive. Yes, please.
I just wanted to say thank you because I've been doing Dharma for 30 years and I started off in the Zen school, and one of the reasons I left there, and I had a wonderful teacher and good community, but one of the reasons I left there was because of exactly what you're talking about. Form took precedence, and you were supposed to sit no matter how much pain you were in. And as long as you stepped into the Zendo with the right foot and bowed at the right time, and it didn't work for my Western mind. And I think the idea, our Dharma teacher last week touched on this a bit too, of trusting yourself. I think that's very hard for a lot of people. I was talking with a friend yesterday, and she said, this is an intelligent, educated, widely traveled, studied in many languages, woman who's in her 60s and said to me, I don't even know when I need to ask for help. And then asking for help is another thing.
Right.
So the trust in yourself, and if you find that you're following a preference, give it up.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate that, sure. And I just to add in that is that, of course, and I think it's implicit, I hope for all of us, is that, you know, we don't have to jump in over our head in the water. We may just dip our little toe in a real safe, contained way of trusting ourselves a little and check it out. And just in a way so that if we do falter, it's not a complete meltdown or something like that. Yeah. So anyway, yeah. One thing I'm just thinking about is about this thing of trusting ourselves. I mean it more than just being aligned with a particular system or structure or form, but that's one of the ways, but there's many other just ways of trusting ourselves or going with surrendering to something external, even around just how the teachings are understood. Many of you will know a famous simile from the Pali Suttas called the simile of the raft, and some of you are nodding your head, so it's like the Buddha is quoted, this is the Buddha speaking, according to the Theravada tradition, and he says, suppose a person put in a lot of work to build a raft, took sticks and tree branches and logs or whatever, got it all together as a raft, and they worked really, really hard to paddle across this body of water. And once they got to the other shore, would it be appropriate then to put that raft on your back as you continued on your way and haul it along with you wherever you went? And the people with him said, no, of course not. You know, the raft will have served its purpose. And the Buddha says, that's right. The raft is for crossing over, but not to clinging to what's done its job. And then he goes on to say, similarly, the Dharma, the whole Dharma itself, all the teachings, everything, are for crossing over. But ultimately, this is a path that is, the intention is to transcend itself. You're not trying to intentionally do it, but it transcends itself. Right? And I like that a lot. And so that's the part of knowing when to let, you know, we don't want to stay stuck in some system or form if it's no longer serving us. But the thing the Buddha doesn't say, I think we should add in, is just like, let's not be too quick. We don't want to jump out of the raft in the middle of the lake, too. Right? So that's that balance, right, of